Chapter 30. 6 weeks had gone since his return from the Zulu campaign, Sean reflected. 6 weeks that had passed in a blur of speed. He sipped coffee from a mug the size of a German beer stein, sitting in the centre of his bed with his nightshirt hitched up to his waist and his legs crossed in comfortable Buddha fashion. The coffee was hot. He sipped noisily, and then exhaled steam from his mouth. The last 6 weeks had been full, too full for brooding grief or regret, although in the evenings when he sat in the study with Waite's memory all about him, the ache was still there. The days seemed to pass before they had fairly begun. There were 3 farms now, the Eunice Corral and the 2 other rented ones from Old Man Pye. He had stocked them with the looted cattle and the purchases he had made since his return. The price of prime beef had dropped to a new low, with nearly 100,000 cattle brought back from Zululand, and Sean could afford to be selective in his buying. He could also afford to wait while the price climbed up again. Sean swung his legs off the bed and walked across the room to the washstand. He poured water from the jug into the basin and tested it tentatively with 1 finger. It was so cold it stung. He stood hesitating in his ridiculously feminine nightshirt, with dark chest hairs curling out above the elaborately embroidered front. Then he mustered his courage and plunged his face into the basin. He scooped water with both hands and poured it over the back of his neck, massaging it into his hair with hooked fingers, and emerged at last, blowing heavily with water dripping down onto his nightshirt. He toweled, stripped off the damp garment, and stood naked, peering out of the window. It had lightened enough for him to make out the smoky swirl of drizzle and mist beyond the pane. "A hell of a day," he grumbled aloud, but his tone was deceptive. He felt excitement for this day. He was fresh and sharp-edged, hungry for breakfast, ready to go, for there was work to do. He dressed, hopping on 1 leg as he got into his breeches, stuffing in the tails of his shirt, and then sitting on the bed to pull on his boots. Now he was thinking about Audrey. He must try and get into town tomorrow to see her. Sean had decided on matrimony. He had 3 good reasons. He had found that it was easier to get into the Bank of England's vaults than to get under Audrey's petticoats without marrying her. When Sean wanted something, no price was too high to pay. Living at the Thunis Corral with Gary and Anna, Sean had decided it would be pleasant to have his own woman to cook for him, mend his clothes and listen to his stories, for Sean was feeling a little left out. The 3rd consideration, by no means the least significant, was Audrey's connections with the local bank. She was one of the very few weaknesses in Old Man Pye's armour. He might even weigh in with Mahobo's Kloof Farm as a wedding present, though even the optimist in Sean realised that this hope was extravagant. Pye and his money were not easily parted. Yes, Sean decided, he would have to find time to get into town and tell Audrey. In Sean's mind, it wasn't a question of asking her. Sean brushed his hair, combed his beard, winked at himself in the mirror, and went out into the passage. He could smell breakfast cooking, and his mouth started to water. Anna was in the kitchen. Her face was flushed from the heat of the stove. "What's for breakfast, little sister?" She turned to him, quickly brushing the hair off her forehead with the back of her hand. "I'm not your sister," she said. "I wish you wouldn't call me that." "Where's Gary?" Sean asked, as though he had not heard her protest. "He's not up yet." "The poor boy's exhausted, no doubt," Sean grinned at her, and she turned away in confusion. Sean looked at her bottom without desire. Strange that Anna, being Gary's wife, should kill his appetite for her. Even the memory of what they had done before was vaguely obscene, incestuous. "You're getting fat," he said, noticing the new heaviness of her body. She ducked her head but didn't answer, and Sean went on, "I'll have 4 eggs, please, and tell Joseph not to dry them out completely." Sean went through into the dining room, and Gary came in through the side door at the same moment. His face was still vacant from sleep. Sean got a whiff of his breath. It smelt of stale liquor. "Good morning, Romeo," said Sean, and Gary grinned sheepishly. His eyes were bloodshot, and he hadn't shaved.
"Hello, Sean. How did you sleep?"
"Beautifully, thank you. I take it that you did also." Sean sat down and spooned porridge from the tureen.
"Have some?"
he asked Gary.
"Thanks."
Sean passed him the plate. He noticed how Gary's hand shook.
"I'll have to talk to him about letting up on the bottle a trifle."
"Hell, I'm hungry." They talked the jerky, disconnected conversation of the breakfast table. Anna came through and joined them. Joseph brought the coffee.
"Have you told Sean yet, Gary?"
Anna spoke suddenly, clearly and with decision.
"No."
Gary was taken by surprise. He spluttered his coffee.
"Told me what?"
Sean asked. They were silent, and Garrick fluttered his hand nervously. This was the moment he had been dreading. What if Sean guessed? What if he knew it was his baby and took them away, Anna and his baby, took them away and left Gary with nothing? Haunted by wild, unreasonable fears, Garrick stared fixedly across the table at his brother.
"Tell him, Gary," commanded Anna. "Anna's going to have a baby," he said.
He watched Sean's face, saw the surprise change slowly to delight, felt Sean's arm close round his shoulders in a painful hug, almost crushing him.
"That's great," Sean exulted. "That's wonderful. We'll have the house full of kids in no time if you keep that up, Gary. I'm proud of you."
Grinning stupidly with relief, Garrick watched Sean hug Anna more gently and kiss her forehead.
"Well done, Anna. Make sure it's a boy. We need cheap labour around here."
"He hasn't guessed," thought Garrick. "He doesn't know, and it will be mine. No one can take it away from me now."
That day they worked in the south section. They stayed together, Gary laughing in happy confusion at Sean's banter. It was delightful to have Sean give him so much attention. They finished early. For once, Sean was in no mood for work.
"My reproductive brother, every barrel loaded with buckshot."
Sean leaned across and punched Gary's shoulder.
"Let's knock it off and go into town. We can have a few quick ones to celebrate at the hotel, and then go and tell Ada."
Sean stood up in the stirrup and yelled above the moo and mill of the herd.
"Amber Janey, bring those 10 sick ones up to the house, and don't forget that tomorrow we're going to fetch cattle from the sale pens."
Amber Janey waved in acknowledgement, and Sean turned back to Garrick.
"Come on, let's get the hell out of here."
They rode side by side, globules of moisture covering their oilskins and shining on Sean's beard. It was still cold, and the escarpment was hidden in wet mist.
"It's real brandy-drinking weather," said Sean,
and Garrick didn't answer. He was frightened again. He didn't want to tell Ada. She would guess. She guessed everything. She would know it was Sean's child. You couldn't lie to her. The horse's hooves plopped wetly in the mud. They reached the spot where the road forked and climbed over the ridge to Ladyburg.
"Ada's going to love being a grandma," chuckled Sean.
And at that moment his horse stumbled slightly, broke its gait, and started favouring its near fore. Sean dismounted, lifted the hoof, and saw the splinter driven deep into the frog.
"Damn it to hell," he swore.
He bent his head, gripped the hilt of the splinter with his teeth, and drew it out.
"Well,
We can't go into Ladyburg now. That leg will be sore for days.
Gary was relieved. It put off the time when he must tell Ada.
Your horse isn't lame. Off you go, man. Give her my love.
Sean looked up at him.
We can tell us some other time. Let's get back home, Gary demurred. Go on, Gary, it's your baby. Go and tell her.
Garrick argued until he saw Sean's temper rising. Then, with a sigh of resignation, he went, and Sean led his own horse back to Thithuna's corral. Now that he was walking, the oilskin was uncomfortably hot and heavy. Sean took it off and slung it over the saddle. Anna was standing on the step as he came up to the homestead.
"Where's Gary?" she called.
"Don't worry. He's gone into town to see Ada. He'll be back by supper time." One of the stable boys came to take Sean's horse. They talked together, and then Sean stooped to lift the injured hoof. His breeches tightened across his buttocks and enhanced the long, moulded taper of his legs. Anna looked at him. He straightened up, and his shoulders were wide across the damp white linen of his shirt. He smiled at her as he came up the steps of the stoop. The rain had made his beard curl, and he looked like a mischievous pirate.
"You must take better care of yourself now."
He put his hand on her upper arm to lead her inside. "You can't stand around in the cold any more." They went in through the glass doors. Anna looked up at him, the top of her head on a level with his shoulder.
"You're a damn fine woman, Anna, and I'm sure you're going to make a fine baby."
It was a mistake, for as he said it, his eyes softened and his face turned down towards hers. He let his arm drop around her shoulders.
"Sean."
She said his name as though it were an exclamation of pain. She moved quickly, fiercely, within the circle of his arm. Her body flattened itself against his, and her hands went up to catch in the thick hair at the back of his head. She pulled his face down, and her mouth opened warm and wet across his lips. Her back arched and thrust her thighs against his legs. She moaned softly as she kissed him. For startled seconds, Sean stood imprisoned in her embrace. Then he tore his face away.
"Are you mad?"
He tried to push her from him, but she fought her way back through his fending hands. She locked her arms around him and pressed her face against his chest.
"I love you. Please, please, I love you. Just let me hold you, that's all. I just want to hold you."
Her voice was muffled by the damp cloth of his shirt. She was shivering.
"Get away from me."
Roughly, Sean broke her hold and almost threw her backwards onto the couch beside the fireplace.
"You're Gary's wife now, and you'll be the mother of his child. Keep your hot little body for him."
Sean stood back from her, with his anger starting to mount.
"But I love you, Sean. Oh, my God, if I could only make you understand how I've suffered, living here with you and not being able to touch you even."
Sean strode across to where she sat.
"Listen to me." His voice was harsh. "I don't want you. I never loved you. But now I could no more touch you than I could go with my own mother."
She could see the revulsion in his face.
"You're Gary's wife. If ever again you look at another man, I'll kill you."
He lifted his hands, holding them with the fingers crooked ready.
"I'll kill you with my bare hands."
His face was close to hers. She could not bear the expression in his eyes. She lashed out at him. He pulled back in time to save his eyes, but her nails gouged bloody lines across his cheek and down the side of his nose.
He caught her wrists and held her, while a thin trickle of blood dribbled down into his beard.
She twisted in his hands, jerking her body from side to side, and she screamed at him.
"You swine, you dirty, dirty swine! Gary's wife, you say? Gary's baby, you say?" She threw her head back and laughed wildly through her screaming. "Now I'll tell you the truth. What I have within me, you gave me. It's yours, not Gary's." Sean let go her wrists and backed away from her.
"It can't be," he whispered. "You must be lying."
She followed him. "Don't you remember how you said goodbye to me before you went to war? Don't you remember that night in the wagon? Don't you remember, don't you? Don't you?" She was talking quietly now, using her words to wound him.
"That was months ago." "Can't be true," Sean stammered, still moving away from her.
3 and a half months, she told him. "Your brother's baby will be a little early, don't you think? But lots of people have premature babies." Her voice droned on steadily. She was shivering uncontrollably now, and her face was ghostly pale. Sean could stand it no longer.
"Leave me! Leave me alone! I've got to think. I didn't know."
He brushed past her and went out into the passage. She heard the door of Waite's study slam shut, and she stood still in the centre of the floor. Gradually her panting came under control, and the storm surf of her anger abated to expose the black reefs of hatred beneath. She crossed the floor, went down the passage and into her own bedroom. She stood in front of the mirror and looked at herself.
"I hate him."
Her lips formed the words in the mirror. Her face was still pale.
"There's one thing I can take from him. Gary's mine now, not his."
She pulled the pins from her hair and let them drop onto the floor. Her hair fell down her back. She shook it onto her shoulders, then lifted her hands and tangled it into confusion. Her teeth closed on her own lips. She bit until she tasted blood.
"Oh, God, I hate him! I hate him!"
she whispered through the pain. Her hands came down onto the front of her dress. She tore it open. Then in the mirror looked without interest at the round bosses of her nipples that were already hardening with the promise of fruition. She kicked off her shoes.
"I hate him."
She stooped, and her hands went up under her skirts into the petticoats. She loosened her pantaloons and stepped out of them. She held them across her chest to tear them, then threw them next to the bed. She swept her arm across the top of her dressing table. One of the bows hit the floor and burst with a splash of face powder, and there was the sudden pungent reek of spilt perfume. She crossed to the bed and dropped onto it. She lifted her knees and her petticoats fell back like the petals of a flower. Her white legs and lower body were the stamen. Just before nightfall there was a shy knock on her door.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"The Nkosikatsi has not told me what I should cook for dinner."
Old Joseph's voice was raised respectfully.
"There will be no dinner tonight. You and all the servants may go." "Very well, Nkosikatsi."
Garrick came home in the dark. He had been drinking. She heard him stagger as he crossed the stoop, and his voice slur as he called.
"Hello! Where's everybody? Anna! Anna, I'm back!"
Silence for a while as he lit one of the lamps, and then the hurried thump, thump of his peg along the passage, and his voice again edged with alarm.
"Anna! Anna, where are you?"
He pushed the door open and stood with the lamp in his hand. Anna rolled away from the light, pressing her face into the pillow and hunching her shoulders. She heard him set the lamp down on the dressing table, felt his hands pulling down her skirts to cover her nakedness, then gently turn her to face him. She looked into his face and saw the uncomprehending horror in it.
My darling? Oh, Anna, my darling, what's happened?
He stared at her broken lips and her breasts. Bewildered, he turned his head and looked at the bottles on the floor, at her torn pantaloons. His face hardened and came back to her.
Are you hurt?
She shook her head.
Who? Tell me who did it.
She turned away from him again, hiding her face.
My darling, my poor darling. Who was it? One of the servants? No.
Her voice stifled with shame.
Please, tell me, Anna, what happened?
She sat up quickly and threw her arms about him, holding him hard so her lips were near his ear.
You know, Gary. You know who did it. No, I swear I don't. Please tell me.
Anna drew her breath in deep, held it a second, then breathed it out.
Sean.
Garrick's body convulsed in her arms. She heard him grunt as though he had been hit. Then he spoke.
This too. Now, this too.
He loosened her hands from his neck and pushed her gently onto the pillows. He crossed the cupboard, opened one of the drawers, and took out Waite's service pistol.
He's going to kill Sean, she thought.
Garrick went out of the room without looking at her again. She waited with her hands clenched at her sides and her whole body stretched tightly. When the shot came at last, it was surprisingly muted and unwarlike. Her body relaxed, her hands opened, and she began to cry softly.